Thank you very much. And let me also start by thanking the panel for their very insightful interventions, and also for the work that your respective organisations do, which is incredible, and we have some very brave staff. We do welcome the discussion on this occasion of the 70th anniversary of the Geneva Conventions. Compliance with international humanitarian law has never been more important. Civilians still make up the majority of casualties for armed conflict. Hospitals and health workers are deliberately targeted, and conflict-induced displacement stands at an all-time high, and conflict-induced hunger continues to threaten millions. More wars are fought in urban areas, and more non-state armed groups are parties to conflict. So on this anniversary, we, the international community, really do need to take stock. Continued calls to comply with international humanitarian law are falling on deaf ears. The incentive to win at all costs can and does influence warring parties to transgress from the laws of war. IHL is sometimes accused of being out of date, of not being adaptable for current technology, or the proxy wars we see more and more, or the proliferation of non-international armed conflicts. But we don't believe this is the case. The Geneva Conventions achieved something outstanding, something amazing, something that is highly unlikely could be reproduced today. They gave a voice to a set of rules that all states could agree. With their universal ratification, the Geneva Conventions are a cornerstone, the bedrock of our understanding and the agreement of how wars should be fought, humanely, courageously, and with integrity. Too often we hear accusations that the conventions are a Western concept, but we know that not to be true. The idea of promoting constraint in warfare has been in existence for many centuries, for example, Asian, Middle Eastern, African, and South American cultures. We hear too that there is no accountability for violations of IHL. It is only the collective political will of states that can change. In the meantime, we think there are steps which we states can do to reaffirm our commitment to IHL. First, we must always consider the plight of civilians and those hors de combat in conflict contexts. Protecting civilians from harm is the moral obligation of all parties to a conflict. Are we prepared for the UNSG's Protection of Civilians report to tell us again next year there's been little or no progress? Second, accountability, not impunity. Where IHL is violated, there must be repercussions. If we continually allow the perpetrators of violations to evade justice, what is the logical conclusion? Anarchy? And third, transparency and IHL implication. In early 2019, the UK published our first report on the domestic implication of our international humanitarian law obligations. This report sets out specific examples of our practice to implement IHL and is intended to help improving understanding of IHL obligations and encourage an informed dialogue on these issues, both at home and abroad. And we hope this will encourage other states to publish details of their activities too. Finally, on this key anniversary, for a set of rules that reinforce our common humanity, we should continue to consider how wars are changing and the challenges we face now in armed conflicts. We can be confident that the set of rules we committed to in 1949, after a long and devastating global conflict, which led to us all hoping never again, will serve us into the future. I would also like to ask a couple of very quick questions. One I think has already been asked, but is really around what more can we do, particularly ahead of conflicts, to engage with non-state armed groups. And secondly, Helen, I was interested in your mentions of climate change. And I just wonder, on the climate issue, what more can we do? Do we have some sort of modelling that will help with that? Thank you very much.